You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, November 15th, 2024. Grandpa Dan, streaming with you, RadioAlbion.com, wrapping up your work week. Kind of taking a look. We've started doing this Friday show as kind of a look back at some of the news stuff this week. And of course, in so doing, we're going to be forced to talk about Trump stuff again. But I want to say from the get-go, that's not going to be the whole show. In fact, probably not even most of the show. We have to talk about it because really that's a lot of what's in the news, even internationally, not just here in America. But I honestly hate talking about it probably as much as y'all are sick of hearing about it. We're going to hit on some of that, but we're going to also move into some other stuff, less prominent news stories that I've seen and read over this past week. So bear with me. We'll go through some of the Trump stuff, some of the observations with that. But I just wanted to say up front, we're going to get in some different stuff. So don't just be like, oh God, Trump stuff again. We're going to have some other stuff. And I think, honestly, the other stuff, you know, will be more interesting. Trump started making his picks, you know, his cabinet picks. And of course, all of the foreign policy ones are warmongering Zionists, which I know, so shocking, I guess, to some people, or maybe not. The RFK pick thing has got the media up in a tizzy. The Matt Gaetz pick also has the media up in a tizzy. And one of the things I found humorous about this is, of course, in the last election, the Republicans now have control. We kind of, in this sense, you know, this isn't anything like 2016. It really isn't. In 2016, if you'll remember, Trump didn't take any money because he, you know, the lobbyists are buying politicians with that. And this time he's taken a lot of people's money. Likewise, there was a different kind of energy in 2016 than, you know, what this version has been. But one of the similarities is Trump is going into office this time with, again, the Republicans control the House and the Republicans control the Senate. And with some of these picks, not the extreme Zionist foreign policy ones, you notice there's no hand-wringing about that. But with his other picks, like Matt Gaetz, regardless of what you think of them, I have a low opinion of all of these politicians. There's probably a few of them that are okay. The one whose wife died and pointed out that everyone in the House of Representatives has an APAC handler that tells him what to do, that guy's okay. You notice he's not getting picked here. His name is notably absent. But Matt Gaetz and the RFK, and to another certain, perhaps lesser extent, Tulsi Gabbard. These three picks are the ones the media is really hyping up as, boy, this is a problem. And you have these people going around talking about how these picks are not going to get confirmed by the Senate, which again points to the ridiculous nature of this entire system. Or is not Team R in complete control? Well, not complete control. I realize they just have a majority, but still, they have the majority of the Senate. These picks should be rubber stamped. These picks should just be okay. Well, the Republicans control the Senate, which do the confirmations. Trump is going to be the president. Any reasonable person would look at this and say, well, okay, whoever he picks is going to get put in there. The confirmation thing should be a foregone conclusion. Sure, the Democrats are free to whine and complain and do their usual routine of our democracy values of who we are, but it shouldn't matter. I mean, whenever Team D has the president and has control of the Senate, no one's too worried about these confirmation hearings. Only when now you have Trump in here and, oh, all these people are saying there's no way these picks are going to get pushed through. But I thought Team R was in control of the Senate. Now, some would make the argument, well, those aren't real Republicans. Those are rhino. And I would say that's incorrect. Those are real Republicans. You always hear that. Oh, well, the problem with these rhinos, they're Republican in name only. They're not real Republicans. And I think this is a misconception that people have that buy into this complete theater anyway. You know, those aren't real Republicans. But I would say you have it backwards. Those are the real Republicans. A few decent ones get through once in a while. Somebody gets in there that maybe will try to do something different. But you see, the vast majority of the Republican Party, like the Tories in Britain, this is who they are. How do you say those aren't real Republicans? Because this is what they do. Time and time again, year after year, election cycle after election cycle, this is what they do. They fulfill their role to make sure that the people don't actually get what they want. Oh, well, these people aren't going to get confirmed. These are impossible to get confirmed. I thought Team R was in control of the Senate. Are they going to go around and campaign against Team D because they're not going to make America great again or whatever the hell else? When push comes to shove, the system is going to work as the system works. That's why I say it's all just theater. And it's an amazing thing to watch people take it so seriously. Now, as I say, you've got, say, RFK, for instance. Bobby Jr., you know, getting put nominated for HHS secretary. And boy, this is a problem. But as I said, these ridiculously poor, pro-foreign country, pro-Israel, warmongering Zionists that have been put together as his foreign policy team, there's no talk about these people are going to have a hard time getting confirmed. I wonder why that is. Are we allowed to question why is it that these people are, we know they're going to be rubber stamped going in without a question. It's become utterly ridiculous now to pretend as though these people aren't just all bought and paid for. Because you look and see who's going to be rubber stamped through there. There's not going to be any question about these people's views. There's not going to be any question of how are you going to be able, sir, in your confirmation hearing, how are you going to be able to fulfill your role for the benefit of the United States when we have all of these public statements from you that seem to be prioritizing the foreign policy goals of a different country, of Israel? How are you going to go in and act like you're going to be some sort of mediator in the Middle East when all of your statements are pro-Israel? Nope, those people are going to be absolutely rubber stamped. And now it's impossible for people to ignore this. I've said it for a while. At this point, it's so in your face that if you ignore it, there's one of two things. You're either so low IQ as to be literally retarded. I don't mean that in any sort of insulting way. I mean technically, scientifically, categorically retarded. Your IQ is so low that you can't even grasp concepts that are right in your face. Or the other option is that you know it and you just refuse to address it. You're just refusing to see it. That's it. That's the only way you don't notice at this point, because it is so in your face. Now you see all of these people. The first appointments were the warmongering Zionists for his foreign policy team. Again, which comes as no surprise to you or me. We knew this was what was going to happen. Now, I've been saying for some time now, for at least a year, and more so in the past 6 months during this ridiculous election theater, I've been saying, because you had all these people, you know, talking about the Trump thing, and I kept pointing out that what people were watching is Trump is publicly negotiating a deal. I was saying a year or so ago, I said, don't forget, his book that he's known for is called The Art of the Deal. He's just making a deal. That's why he's going out there making all these speeches about what all he's going to do for Israel. And I said around 6 months or so ago, I said, what you're seeing now is this hard negotiation over the collateral. These people view everything in the terms of usury. They want collateral. Trump has promised to do all these things for Israel. He took all this money from that Adelson woman to promise to sign off on basically giving everything of the Palestinians to Israel, back up Israel and all their stuff. But they wanted the collateral. And you saw this hard negotiation. Oh, they're going to put Trump. They're going to put Trump in prison. This is just negotiations. And I said at the time, when you start seeing these charges drop, that the deal has been made. And we started seeing that. We started seeing these cases slowly starting to go away. Talk of it in the media was going away. With that in mind, the election night results shouldn't be any surprise to anybody. The deal was done. As others have pointed out, and you, the listener, I'm sure y'all noticed too, we, like I said, nothing like 2016. When Trump won, there were public meltdowns of the media. I mean, yeah, individual lunatic leftists, but I mean, by and large, the media did not have their election night meltdown as they did in 2016. They, in fact, they were quite well prepared, quite poised for sit there and talk about, oh, well, this is surprising. This bellwether county has gone to Trump. The deal has been made. I don't know what they went for collateral. Perhaps the legal charges themselves are the collateral, because we've seen those are now dropping like flies. There's no more. There's not even any more talk. You know, a few months ago, they were talking about, oh, my gosh, if Trump got elected, you could have a situation where a sitting president is going to be sentenced to prison. He's going to be making policy decisions from Rikers Island or whatever, you know, from Rikers prison. Of course, that was silly and nonsensical. He wasn't ever going to get elected unless he got a deal done. And if he got a deal done, these charges are going away. If some low IQ district attorney or whatever in, say, New York or whatever other place tries to ignore the orders that come down and say, well, I'm going to throw Trump in prison anyway. I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to ignore these phone calls I'm getting that says it's time to go ahead and forget this. We're moving on. I'm going to go ahead and do my, you can 100% bet that they will suddenly be embroiled in a scandal. They will suddenly have pictures of them at a P. Diddy party or whatever, and it will be they who will be destroyed. Suddenly you'll find out they were embezzling money or this or that or the other. People do not get in these positions unless there is collateral in place for all of them. So when the call comes down and says, no, we've made a deal with Trump, so it's time for you to drop these charges and for these cases to go away, they will do that. If they fail to do that, then you will soon find out what collateral is held against these people. And this is the nature of the system that governs over you. This is the nature of the system that we live under. Blackmail, bribery, corruption, also known as our democracy, values of who we are. I know it can be tiresome sometimes to look at these things as a truth and to see all these people just buying in, you know, time and time again. But on the flip side of that, think about the fact that you don't have to be disappointed. You know, I'm already reading articles, people that were saying, writing articles, opinion pieces, well-known people about how Trump is our last great hope to save America. And now we're already seeing articles about how these people are starting to be disappointed. I mean, sure, stuff like Tulsi Gabbard and RFK or whatever, you know, those are a bone, so people can kind of keep acting like this is going to make a difference. But I'm already seeing articles about how disappointed they are. Those people are disappointed because they never accepted the truth. So you and I, we understood. We understood this is deal making. There's nothing more, nothing less. This is deal making. We're not disappointed. We already expected. When his foreign policy team is made up of lunatic Zionists, they're going to back Israel even harder than the previous administration. Not surprised. Nothing surprising at all. In light of all this, I was thinking the other day, just the other day, I was thinking, you know, I'm already feeling so good about the fact that I didn't participate in this theater. I didn't vote. I didn't sign off on the lesser of two evils. I'm older than probably a lot of y'all, maybe most of y'all, I don't know. And I've been hearing this lesser of two evils argument for decades, for my whole life. You know, for my whole life, I've been hearing this, oh, well, yeah, this guy sucks, but he's better than the other guys. You got to vote for them because it's an important election. I'm proud of the fact that I didn't participate because that means I have not consented to be governed by these wicked, evil assholes. I have not consented to that. I mean, I follow the laws, and I'm going to do what I need to, you know, I'm going to obey their rules and their laws and stuff, because, you know, but I don't consent to it. I'm obeying it because if I don't do that, they will send men with guns to either kill me or throw me in jail. So, you know, I'm being ruled over by the threat of force and violence, but I don't consent to it. It's the difference between being in a relationship and being raped. I'm not in a relationship. I follow their rules and stuff because they rule by the threat of force and violence. But I don't consent. I've not given my consent. Now, of course, we expect to see a real serious... Zelensky's going to be shown the door. The Ukraine thing, they're going to have to find a way to wind that down. I think that may be trickier than what they're imagining, because they're going to try to do it in some sort of face-saving manner. But the media can always spin the narrative however they want to. Again, they can wind up giving Russia basically everything they want, and the media will go out and say, well, Ukraine won because Russia didn't take Kiev. Which Russia never wanted Kiev. Nobody wants the Ukraine. It's a shithole. They can spin that how they want. I think the China stuff, aside from, you know, trade embargoes and stuff like that, I think that'll back burner. But we all know the Israel thing is front and center. And that's where this is going to go. I saw an interesting story just this morning, and I thought, you know, this is the country that they're going to use to go to war against Iran. As I read a story this morning, the guy that's in charge of purchasing for the Pentagon, so this is no small potatoes guy, he's in charge of purchasing for the Pentagon. He was talking at some sort of weapons symposium somewhere, and he was talking about how shocked they are. You know, they admitted how shocked they are at how capable and some of the weaponry that the Houthis are using. What the U.S. has run into dealing with Yemen is much like what Israel has run into dealing with Hezbollah in Lebanon. Yeah, they can fly their jets and launch their missiles and sorties and blow all sorts of stuff up. And then like the next day, these people just pop up somewhere else launching missiles, you know. And there was a story just a few days ago that they attacked the, I believe it was the Abraham Lincoln Carrier Task Force. And thwarted their activities. Of course, Pentagon denied this, but then you have these people coming out talking, admitting that they're shocked. It's like if you have a big ant den in your backyard and you are out there with your sledgehammer and start killing ants, you can stand out there and do that all day long, and they're still going to sting you. The next day, there's still going to be an anthill there. They can't. What they're able to do, and this, again, is reflective. You see this with Israel in Lebanon. Yeah, they did their spectacular blow stuff up, bomb hospitals, schools, the usual Israeli mode of operandi that you expect. But at the end of the day, Hezbollah waited because they knew at the end of the day, you've got to send your ground forces in. And Israel sent their ground forces in, and they proceeded to get their asses kicked, which was not really a shocking development because ground war is what Hezbollah excels at. Likewise, you send these carrier task force in to project power. And yeah, they can launch and drop bombs on the Houthi, but it doesn't work. They don't have to sink an aircraft carrier to win. You know, you read these articles in the spin. You always watch for the weasel words. Watch for the ways they talk about it. The Houthi said, you know, they thwarted these U.S. objectives in coming in there by attacking this carrier task force. And the U.S. government says, no, 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 no. All of the drones, all of the missiles were shot down. No ships were hit. Everything was fine. It's pretty bad when I believe the Houthis more than I believe the Pentagon. But anyway, setting that aside, look for the weasel words. They don't have to sink a ship. The ship, the carrier task force goes in there to carry out a mission. And if they're so busy sitting there defending themselves from drone swarms and missile attacks to carry out their initial mission, then guess which side here has achieved their objectives? They don't have to sink a ship. That may not even be in you know, what they're trying to do, although I'm sure they wouldn't mind if they did that. If they thwart the mission, if they bring a sail in the carrier task force to do whatever, A, B, or C, but they're unable to do that because they're too busy sitting there shooting. They can't launch planes because there's swarms of drones coming in and they might lose an aircraft. They're not able to carry out their mission, that the Houthis win that engagement. Look for the weasel words. Now, these are the people that are going to go in and wipe out Iran. When these empires collapse, a lot of times the triggering final nail in the coffin, you have all of these different pressures. And a lot of times the final nail in the coffin is a catastrophic military failure, a catastrophic military defeat. And that could be what we're seeing, you know, what we're seeing building up here. I saw a story this morning where some woman, the UK is just insane. I'm sorry, it just is. And I saw a story this morning where some woman in the UK is now getting the Sven Longshanks treatment over a Twitter post from a year ago. And the post was left, the post was ultimately taken down. I'm not sure if it was taken down by the woman or by Twitter, but a Twitter post. And she's being given the Sven Longshanks treatment. She got the, well, I don't think they kicked her door in like they did Sven. I don't think they 100% hut-hutted her like they did Sven with their automatic weapons pointing at him and whatnot. But they did come to her house, tell her she's under this criminal investigation and all of this over a Twitter post from a year ago. This is our democracy value of who we are. This is the system every time you vote that you consent to if you live in the UK. You have to look at what your government does, the system that you live under does. And when you participate in this theater, you're consenting to that. You may not like it, but when you do the vote for the lesser of two evils and participate and do things to support the system, you are consenting to this. Now, this story was interesting to me because I'm sure I don't know anything about this one. She's some kind of journalist. I don't know. I'm not familiar with her work or anything like that. But I thought to myself, I can rest assured, I'm 100% confident that when Sven Longshanks was going through his ordeal, if you asked this woman about it, she would shrug it off. Some sort of evil Nazi white supremacist or something. But you see, it always expands. That's the way the corrupt system works. They go after people who are easier targets first, and when everybody else shrugs their shoulders and goes along with that, then eventually it expands and it comes to them. You look here in the U.S., this thing with Alex Jones. He's using the civil courts to literally destroy something. And, you know, I'm not an Alex Jones fan. Y'all know that. But when you look, again, though, you have to look at this precedent. You know, it could completely bankrupt somebody and ruin them through the civil courts. He hasn't done anything criminal at all. And yet, there's YouTube videos all over of the police violating people's supposed constitutional rights, left and right. They're not going to get awarded some ridiculous $1 billion settlement. That precedent has been set. I mean, all the people that sit there and shrug it off aren't stopping to think that, well, okay, well, this now could be done to anybody. You can be obeying the law 100% and they can still just come in and completely take everything you have. People sit around this country and worry about the IRS. You know, the IRS could come take your stuff. That's less frightening than the idea of some judge somewhere could just hand out summary judgments for people who don't like your opinions and demand that you give them all of your stuff. That's scarier than deal with the IRS. At least with the IRS, there is some form of procedure there. There are appeals you can make. And, you know, contrary to what they say, taking your stuff is kind of a last resort for the IRS. Usually they just want, you know, they want their money. If you just refuse to give it to them, yeah, they'll take your stuff. But at least there's some sort of, what do I want to say, some sort of framework for a procedure here. The idea that people who don't like your opinions, your political opinions or your views can just cherry pick a judge and have that judge hand out summary judgments without you even really getting to present your side of the story in court and tell you, you got to give all of your stuff. People shrug it off. Now back to this story from the UK. This woman now is getting the Sven Longshanks treatment. People who shrugged their shoulders didn't care what was happening to Sven. Now, of course, it's going to happen to them. Oh, now all of a sudden, they're going to care. These laws are written so vaguely. Now, you and I, yeah, I we all really hope that we see a day when Sven can come back to podcasting. You know, we miss his content. And I still have a hope to do so. But he's got to find a way to do that and remain in the legal framework in the UK. And you look at these things, and it's so convoluted. These laws are written, intentionally written, in such a vague manner. They can be interpreted however they want to interpret them. And I don't see how that works, honestly. Maybe at least he can come back and take over the technical back end, non-public side of it, posting shows and whatnot. God, I hope so. If not, he's gonna have to find somebody else. I'm not doing this part forever. But you look at how these laws are written, and they're so vague. Incitement to racial hatred. You know, and they never present a single witness to say they were incited to hate anybody. And it doesn't matter. Just like Alex Jones didn't really get to present his case in court, because it doesn't matter. They could just look at it and say, you know. I mean, during Sven's trial, I believe it was one of the jurors was like, well, I don't want to understand why we're even doing this. This is freedom of speech. And that person was shut down and told, well, this is law. You have to convict. If we, basically the government, can say we interpret this as incitement or whatever. Now, Sven, I'm not speaking for Sven on this, by the way. This is my personal opinion. Sven is doing everything he can to comply with the system and show that he's doing what he needs to do. So make no mistake, these are just my opinions. I'm entitled to my opinions on these things. And as ridiculous as the U.S. is that we live in, I look at these U.K. laws. They're absolutely, absolutely insane. Speaking of our democracy values, who we are, the AfD in Germany. In Germany, occupied Germany. You always see this. They all this talk of democracy. They'll point to a place like Belarus and say Lukashenko is not legitimate because he doesn't allow any opposition. Never mind the fact that there's no opposition because he's really popular with the people. They do the same in any other countries that they don't like. And yet now, every time you, under our democracy values of who we are system, anytime a political party starts to rise to any sort of prominence, they just outlaw them. One of the greatest, most stark examples of this was Golden Dawn in Greece several years ago. They suddenly declared them all a terrorist organization, threw them in prison. Sitting politicians. Now the AfD in Germany is gaining prominence as one of the more popular political parties. And they're trying to outlaw them. They just try to outlaw the competition. It shows time and time again these accusations they level countries, at governments they don't like, is projection. Oh, Lukashenko, he's not really about the democracy. He doesn't allow competition. Why, they themselves outlaw any competition that in the most meek and mild manner way might voice a view contradictory to the narrative that you're supposed to all go along with. You do have power. I'm not trying to be just discouraged. We got to look at things for what they are. And as this system, talking the democracy system in general, breaks down in legitimacy, more people are going to do like me, and they're going to quit participating. I saw a story recently in the UK. Keir Starmer is already polling lower in popularity than Rishi Sunak was when he left. He's already bottomed out. He's lasted longer than Liz Truss, but he's already highly unpopular. And the article I was reading about this, they were kind of written in a way where you're supposed to be surprised, but I wasn't surprised at all. I've said all along, what you saw here was people didn't just jump up one day and decide, oh, we really love Labor's platform, so we're going to vote for them. It's just that the people that had turned out time and again to vote for the Republican, oh, I'm sorry, the Tories in this case, it's a distinction without a difference. The people just got sick of it, and they said there's no point in voting for the Tories, and they stayed home. It wasn't that the people suddenly, all of a sudden, Labor is popular in the country. It's just everybody quit voting for the Tories because there's no point. Just like the Republicans. Oh, vote for the Republicans so they can not confirm any of Trump's appointees that aren't lunatic Zionists in the foreign policy department. People quit voting for the Tories because they're just like, there's no point. They're not going to do any of this stuff anyway. And you wind up with the Labor Party, who is, again, shouldn't be a shock to anybody. They're polling at the bottom of the barrel. Nobody, Keir Starmer doesn't have any mandate. And at some point, it's impossible to hide that the system itself doesn't have any legitimacy. Back in the 60s, I've read this. This was before my time. But like back in the 60s, the hippies had a saying, you know, they'd say, man, what if they threw a war and nobody showed up? In other words, what if everybody just refused to participate in their wars? I say, what if they hold an election and nobody shows up? People would say, oh, you're not voting, so you're not affected, but you are. If they hold an election and no one shows up, if the UK holds another, let's say Keir Starmer can't hold together, and okay, we got to have another election, and the people who have resigned themselves at voting for the Tories is pointless. And then maybe the people who've been voting for the Labour Party say, well, it's worthless. And they hold an election and 5% of the public turns out. That's not, they can't keep doing that. It doesn't work. They can't. The whole thing just breaks down. What if they hold an election and nobody shows up? And this is the real threat to the system. It is not voting for this lesser of two evil or that lesser of two evil. The real threat to the system is people just quit showing up. People quit participating in that. I think the UK, for any number of reasons, is maybe a little further ahead of the curve on that front. But I believe we're ultimately going to see it in these other places as they're trying to ban AfD in Germany. As you've got the Republicans in the Senate now acting as the Democrats to block Trump's appointments. And at some point in time, maybe they'll throw an election and nobody will show up. We're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining me. I hope you have a great weekend. If you haven't caught our content we've had up, I know you miss it. You can always go back and listen. It's a great thing about the podcast for me. You can go back and check it out when you have time. I hope you will. I hope you enjoy your weekend. As always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.